right, welcome everybody to another installment of Innovation Crush. I am your gracious host, Chris Denson. And in case you haven't listened before, I hope you have, but in case you have not, in case you're one of the 11 people who has not heard this show, we cover all things innovation, great ideas, great marketing, great products, great people behind them, because you can't make any of that stuff without people. So with that being said, I'd like to say hello to Hugh Forrest.
Hello. How are you guys? How are you?
I am more than one, more than a man. So I appreciate you thinking of me as larger than just one individual. No, I'm good. How are you?
I'm great and very honored to be on any show that showcases innovation. So this is a great treat and a great honor to be here.
Well, thanks. Don't speak too soon, though. Yeah. We don't know how this is going to turn out. I'm going to read something that I thought was pretty interesting. How about that? Hugh is a force of nature and one of the main reasons South by Southwest is so phenomenally successful. His leadership in making South by Southwest so interesting and wonderfully enjoyable is evident by the care he puts into finding presenters, nurturing emerging topics, and keeping everything running smoothly for speakers at the conference and attendees. What do you think of that?
Those are nice words. I hope that I can marginally live up to them on my best days. But I am thrilled that someone will say something about that. Much of the credit to South by Southwest goes to having a great staff, and a lot of the credit as well goes to the power of the community. South by Southwest is a community event, and so much of what makes South by Southwest magic is the energy and enthusiasm and passion and wisdom of the community. So I just sometimes get to be the figurehead for all this, but again, there are a lot of people who deserve a lot more credit than I do.
That's great. So the community appreciates that. I'm a member of it. I actually went to my first South by this year, so I've been inaugurated. So give me the 101 on Hugh Forrest. How would you define yourself and your work?
How would I define myself and my work? I'm a grinder. What I lack in intelligence, I probably make up for in with a willingness or a commitment to insanely long hours or early hours or however you want to phrase that. I think that in all seriousness, you know, what we do at South by Southwest is all about it can be a sexy job sometimes, particularly in March during the event. It can be sexy and fun, but behind what happens in March is 8 months of just hammering out detail and detail and detail.
Right.
And I think we do that pretty well, although I know that there's still lots of details that we haven't yet completely hammered out. So I always say that South by Southwest is always a work in progress. We always have lots of room for improvement. If we ever get to that point where we don't have improvement, then it's time to quit and look for a new job.
Well, speaking of not quitting, you've been a part of the group for 20 years now?
Yes, I joined in 1989.
Oh, wow.
Quit for a little while or took a little bit of a breather in the early 90s, then came back in 1994. So I've been here for quite a long time. It's changed immensely over this two decades plus that I've been here. And I could never, ever have possibly imagined that the event would grow as big and as big in quantity and as big as in quality as it has now. But we've been very lucky to be at the right place at the right time on several different occasions.
That's awesome. So under your purview is one of those words I always hate, but it always just pops up into my head. Like, I'm like, oh, what's your purview? So my apologies for that, even though you may not hate it as much as I do. But under your purview of interactive, right? How does Hugh Forrest, a veteran at interactive festival programming, how do you define interactive? I think a lot of people have different definitions for the word, or they think of things as interactive, and there are varying degrees, but when you sum it up, what is the Hugh Forrest version of what interactive is?
Well, I think interactive, I'm not going to give you a very good answer here, Chris. I think interactive is somewhat of a nebulous term. It encompasses so many different things, a lot of which are in the tech sphere, a lot of which are not. I always tend to say or tend to think and try to project to my staff that, we're an event that's more about creativity than about technology. It just so happens that at this point in time, so many people are doing so many very creative things using technology, and hence a lot of our programming is tech-based. But so for me, interactive has a strong component of creativity, and that's always one of the reasons that we always try to have people at the event that are more creative than they are technical, whether that's an author or some kind of performer, but gives tech people kind of a different way to approach their craft and approach their creativity.
Right. No, that's brilliant. You said in a recent interview that geeks are the new rock stars, which is very poetic given what South by Southwest is. Kind of define that or explain it a little bit.
Well, I usually say that in a little more context, in the sense that there was for the interactive event that I work on, for a long time, we were the smallest part of South by Southwest. And there's nothing wrong with being small.
Don't tell that to my wife.
I wished we would grow more. We didn't quite know what we were doing. If we were a startup, and we are a startup to some extent, you could say we had a very, very, very long valley of death. I can remember during this valley of death period where we weren't particularly growing in either quantity or quality, and me lamenting to my colleagues, my friends, my parents, my relatives, whoever would listen, I just don't, and the lament would be, I just don't understand how we're going to grow. I don't know how we're going to grow. We've got movie stars coming to South by Southwest. We've got rock stars coming to South by Southwest. We've got popular bands. We've got popular films. And my section of the event is all they are is geeks. And who cares about geeks? And
right.
That was in the early, right around 2000 or so, saying that. What has changed, I think, dramatically in the last 15 years, particularly in the last 15 years, is that this idea that geeks have become rock stars, and particularly this mythos of entrepreneurs, of most directly embodied by the Mark Zuckerberg journey from college dropout to founder and CEO of this billion-dollar company.
And he's on his way to being the richest man on the planet.
Absolutely.
That's what I read about.
So, again, that whole entrepreneurial journey, myth, concept, goal has really changed, I think, the way we look at the tech industry and the way we look at geeks, and has really, really benefited our growth at South by Southwest. I think initially one of the reasons we grew with Interactive, or were lucky enough to grow, is that geeks wanted to be at the same place where these bands and movie stars and rock stars were at. To be able to say that they spoke at the same event that Johnny Cash spoke at, or spoke at the same event where Bruce Springsteen was a keynote. But again, in recent years, the geeks have become this force of nature, and
Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah.
Along those lines, though, how did you know to stick with it? Right, you said you had this lull of a period where, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you guys are running a business, and you know, when people try to launch new products and they don't quite catch on, like, how do you know to give it enough rope to continue that you know you're going to have an upswing versus like, okay, this isn't working, and you know, Hugh may be out of a job.
Well, believe me, there were many times when I thought we should have. We were not going down the right path here, and that what we were doing on the interactive side just did not match the rest of the event. And why are we still doing this? We were lucky in the sense that we had this had South by Southwest music that was going full bore and essentially covered the bills for us. If we were a standalone event, we would not have survived that Valley of Death. But again, it had music to pay the bills and keep us afloat. You know, every time I went to my boss, Roland, saying, "Hey, it's time to pack this in," he'd, you know, say, "Well, just try, you know, one more year, and I think things will turn around." And you know, lo and behold, eventually they did. And I think it's probably an experience that a band has when they've been playing for quite a while and not had quite the success they wanted, and then all of a sudden it all kind of comes together, and you have this strange feeling of what are we doing differently now that we were before. I mean, right. All of a sudden everyone likes us, and before no one liked us. What's the big difference? But I think if there's any easy explanation there, it's just that you have to put in a lot of hours of grunt work to finally start reaping that benefit. And I don't want to imply in any way that, you know, we're, again, a finished product. We still have a long, long way to go in our journey. But we finally began to see the kind of success that we had worked for so long. And that was nice to and fun.
When you look back, can you kind of pinpoint a turning point or the first time you said, it is working?
Well, the first time, yeah, looking back, I think it's much easier to pinpoint than when we were there in the present. Looking back, we first started to see some positive growth literally 10 years ago, 2004. We went into a strong 10-year growth cycle, hockey stick type scenario, which has begun to level off a little in the last year, simply because we kind of maxed out the infrastructure. But why did that start? I mean, again, a lot of reasons, a lot of that started that growth cycle, not the least of reasons, just blind luck. But we were lucky or smart or however you want to phrase that enough to kind of tap into the social media stuff at a pretty early age. And one of the things that we had that looked smart in retrospect, we didn't know that it was particularly smart at the time, was in 2004, we had a gentleman named Jonathan Abrams as our keynote speaker, one of our keynote speakers. He was the founder and CEO of this of Friendster, if you remember Friendster.
Yep. I still have my account.
Of course. nice. Friendster was the precursor of MySpace. Yep. MySpace, you know, all that stuff. And I had seen him on a late night TV program and thought, wow, this guy's pretty funny. We ought to get him involved in the event. And we reached out to him and finally got his attention, and he came to the event, and he turned out to be kind of a jerk. And alienated quite a few attendees with what he said during his keynote.
So he has no Friendsters, is pretty much why we have no Friendster.
This is what technology is for, to build Friendsters when we don't have one. And strangely enough, Friendster's popularity, I think, began to kind of plateau after South by Southwest. I'm not sure that there was any direct cause and effect there, but that was, again, our first kind of foray into social media, and social media has been very good for our growth. I always say that the biggest factors in our growth are social media and startups. And clearly the single biggest factor in our growth and ascension and emergence was 2007 when Twitter didn't launch at South by Southwest. They'd already been out for 4 or 5 months before the event, but they got their first big push at the event.
That's
and,
great.
That is, again, was a game changer for us.
So you single-handedly, no, just kidding. But no, but you look at companies like Twitter that found a huge success, obviously, and, you know, have continued for 7+ years now. Foursquare, you know, Facebook in the early days. First of all, do you guys get any kickback from any of that growth?
If only. I mean the irony of Twitter or not, maybe irony is not the right word, but you know, it was a great in 2007. It was a great addition to the event. It was a great app for the event. You could tell it was something you could use to see where your friend was having breakfast or what party he or she was going to. So it allowed you to really keep track of your network in this fairly large space that is Austin during South by Southwest. But you know, I always say no one really no one in 2007 could envision how big this thing was going to become in 3 or 4 or 5 years. I mean, yeah, it was this great app for the event itself, but would it translate farther than the event? I remember people talking, no, this is just something the geeks want to use. No one else will ever use it.
Yeah.
And it was several years before it began to penetrate into the, to what I'll say is the more mainstream society. I think that's similar to a lot of things that happen at South by Southwest, where you have a band that has huge buzz at South by Southwest, but maybe never, you know, makes it quote unquote beyond that, or a film that has huge buzz that maybe never makes it. And there's certainly been several apps or products or software items, digital installations, whatever you want to call it, that have been at South by Southwest, and everyone's thought they're great, and then they just, you know, don't particularly change the world afterwards. And there have been things at South by Southwest that no one has quite noticed that two right. or 3 years you're like, holy cow, that was here when it was small. So it's a great in our best days we're a preview of the future, but there are plenty of times where we are an inaccurate preview of the future.
But along those lines, like, you know, there was the guys from Snapchat were on the Colbert Report one day, and he made this joke about, like, college kids, instead of now, you know, what we used to do was start a band, right? And now they're starting companies, like the where you say geeks are the new rock stars. It's almost in a literal sense to his point. And just like the music industry, you never know who's going to be a success. Have you seen, after doing this for quite some time, like, are there any sort of indicators or predictors that you see as like, okay, they've got these three components locked down, and they're closer to success, closer to long term success than, you know, the other program that does not have these things.
Well, I wish I could identify those three things, I would have
you'd be rich,
made some smart investments a long while ago. But what I have seen, and I think this, you can apply this across many industries, is that the companies or organizations or startups that are most successful at an event like South by Southwest are ones that have done this before, have a fair degree of experience within this realm. And you know, the two examples I'll use there, one, again, with Twitter, they broke out of the 2007 event, and that helped pave a lot of their way for success in future years. But what we often forget is that Ev Williams, who is one of the co-founders of Twitter, had been coming to South by Southwest for the previous 4 or 5 years. And whether it was working on Blogger or the podcasting software or various other projects that he was talking about at the event that never really created a huge weren't earth shaking apps like Twitter, but he knew the event. He knew how to work the event, and that paved the way for his success and the company's success in 2007. Same thing in 2009 with what you mentioned earlier with Foursquare. Dennis Crowley had been coming to the event for many years and was pretty familiar with the event. So, you know, I think with all of these things, again, whether it's tech or whether it's a band or whether it's a film, you know, it's I read this quote a while back. I'm sure I won't do it justice, but it's not overnight it's success. It's the people who stay up all night working to create success.
That's brilliant. It's kind of like in writing, you know, they say write what you know, right? And what you're saying is these companies knew the environment so well that they knew how to play in it. And, you know, and obviously you've got a good representation of society. Everyone loves music. You know, everybody likes films. And we all can't help but to do something interactive on a daily basis. So,
the companies knew the landscape. They knew how to play the game well. And again, I think that's in many cases, the people are the companies who have the most success at South by Southwest. They've done it a couple times. They've gotten the drill down. They know how to work the event, hack the event, however you want to phrase that, and can achieve good results from that experience.
You began your career, if I'm correct, as a journalist.
Yes, and at some point when I grow up, I will be a journalist again.
We're all journalists of some. We're all reporting something at some point in time to somebody.
Absolutely.
How did that sort of background prepare you, or did it? You know, does it relate to what you're doing today?
Great question. I think that. Well, I was an English major in college, and I think that as much as we've advanced light years in technology since the dark ages when I was in college, the ability to write a sentence somewhat coherently still goes a long, long way. In terms of being a journalist or being a writer or being a struggling journalist or writer, you know, I think the idea was always that you were telling someone something new, you were breaking some kind of news. And I hope, again, that's what we do at our best days at South by Southwest, is we expose people to new ideas and new thoughts and new ways to think about their craft and put a spotlight on people who are doing new and completely innovative things. So I think there's some degree of overlap between those two callings.
Yeah, it's great. And when, you know, little Hugh Forrest back in the day, you know, did you grow up saying I want to be a festival director? Like, what was when you were 10 to 15, 19, what was your personal goal? Like, what did you want to accomplish?
I think I was always, again, more on the wanting to be a writer, but I was I grew up in Austin. I was a huge fan and participant in the Austin music scene, would go to tons of shows, I think caught a little bit of the bug that way of wow, this is fun to see. I bet it's really fun to organize also. Now, how wrong was I in that? Because it's usually not fun to organize, but the end result is sometimes fun. Right. But I was lucky enough to, again, grow up in a city that really put a high premium on creativity. I think that that kind of background really shaped what a lot of what we try to do at South by Southwest today.
That's great. When one of the things I used to hate was sort of the idea of crowdsourcing. I was always kind of like, well, people will come up with dumb ideas. We need experts to kind of curate this for them. But you know, a few years ago, you guys launched a panel picker. And I think I was part of the AFI Digital Content Lab at the time. And I'm like, well, why should we have to pitch a concept? Like, they should be coming to us. But what sort of successes have you seen from the panel picker? and what kind of went into that decision of allowing the people to help you curate what's going to happen at South by Southwest?
Well, I'll answer that in reverse order. I mean, the inspiration for the panel picker, or inspiration, I guess, is kind of a nice word. It was, or is a nice word. It was a somewhat of a direct ripoff of Threadless, the online t-shirt company. We had done a promotion with Threadless in maybe 2006 or so, and were completely blown away by the amount of response we got off this thing. And if listeners aren't familiar with Threadless, it is a t-shirt company where, you know, this crowdsourced t-shirts company, people send in designs around a particular theme. The crowd votes on which designs they like most. The thing that gets the most votes is then made into a t-shirt and sold. So it's kind of test marketing. And again, we'd worked with them on a promotion 1 month and got a phenomenal number of entries, more entries than anything we'd ever done before, times 100. And I thought, well, wow, how can we, you know, take this same kind of concept and apply it to what we do, which is so much of what we do, which is organizing sessions. So this idea of creating this panel picker was somewhat born that way. And the basic concept is the same, that anyone who wants to speak at the event can enter an idea into this interface. We have a month-long period where we accept ideas, and then the ideas are posted on a voting interface. And again, anyone with an internet connection can vote on which ideas they like most, which ideas they don't like, and comment on ideas as well. The panel picker does a lot of things really well, and it's helped a lot of our growth. That said, it's certainly an imperfect system,
right.
Not the least of which imperfect, because it takes a process that is three-dimensional, at least three-dimensional, i.e. speaking on a panel, and, you know, translates it to something that's two-dimensional, which is just a proposal on a screen. So it's sometimes they're great speakers who can make a bad topic completely fascinating. Sometimes they're bad speakers that can make a great topic boring. And the panel picker doesn't quite account for that. But it's helped us, again, leverage the power of the community to get some great ideas, to better understand what the community is thinking about, to get people involved in the event that were never involved previously. And it's also turned out to be this kind of great viral marketing campaign where people are lobbying their friends to vote for their ideas. And so we get a big push via social media about South by Southwest at this time of the year, August, when panel picker voting is open. And so people are talking about South by Southwest now, and that has helped our growth, because, I mean, right. I'm not very smart, but I understand that if you...
You're a smart guy, Hugh.
If the buzz for an event starts in August, it'll be that much higher in March than if the buzz starts for an event in December. So it's helped us out in a lot of ways.
I'm convinced now that I will use the panel picker.
You know, Chris, there have been some great or not so great examples of, you know, phenomenal ideas that have gone through the panel picker that have gone completely unnoticed. And I think the best example there, is there was a little social media company a few years ago that applied to speak at the event via the panel picker. It got very few votes from the general public. The advisory board didn't like it very much. Staff thought, this isn't all that great. And so we, as with a lot of the ideas that come into the panel picker, we sent the organizers of this idea a email saying, thanks for applying. Really great idea. Unfortunately, we just don't have room for it at this year's event. Went back a few weeks later and looked, and this was an idea from Pinterest, which was just breaking at the time.
We're not Pinterested.
Yeah, we were able to pull them back in, and they won Speaker of the Event at that year's South by Southwest. So again, it is not a perfect system. It has plenty of flaws, for people who are listening who submit ideas that are great ideas that don't make it in, you know, understand that we aired on Pinterest, so we may well err on your great idea. So please don't take it too seriously if you don't get in. The competition with the panel picker is incredibly intense. So there are lots of great ideas that get in, lots of great ideas that don't get in also.
So where should the people who got turned down send their hate mail?
Directly call me at 2 o'clock in the morning. That generally achieves best results.
We'll make sure we air your number at the end of the interview. How many submissions do you guys get, and how many votes go through the system each year?
This year we're at about 3,000 total entries for interactive. The South by Southwest Music, South by Southwest Film, and South by Southwest EDU also use the system now. So when you add in those, we're at about, I think, above 4,000 total entries. The number of entries in the in this interface has increased almost every year since we launched the thing. The first year we had something like 300 entries, then it went to 700 entries, then it went to 1500 entries. The growth has slowed down a little more recently, but the growth was phenomenal for the first few years. And you know, it's very core. The panel picker is just simply a way for us to create engagement with our audience and our potential audience. And if someone's interested enough and committed enough to enter an idea, a speaking idea, then maybe there's someone that we can talk to and get them interested and excited to attend the event. So again, it's been a great way to help identify, help engage our audience. I'm firm believer in this idea from the Clue Train Manifesto that markets are conversations, and the more you can converse and communicate with your audience and your market, the stronger whatever product is that you're involved with becomes.
I think about the Kickstarter campaign for potato salad. Have you seen that one where the guy raised like 60 grand? Just like, I will make you potato salad. Yes, that was one of mine. I guess really quick, is there a single like worst or hilarious panel picker pitch that, that's a tongue twister, panel picker pitch that you've heard? Like, is there something like you're like, oh my gosh, we had this one thing where it was completely ridiculous? Are you not allowed to say?
No, I mean the weakness that we tend to see in a lot of proposals to the panel picker is, and this isn't so funny. It's as funny as it is just a reality, is that a lot of the proposals tend to be too general. We'll get a proposal on future of social media. Well, that's a 3-day conference. It's not a 60-minute presentation or a panel. And I think audiences at South by Southwest or at TED or at any other great tech or creativity related event, what they want is depth, not width. Right. And typically the best presentations or best panels or best sessions are ones that really take a small portion of the given topic and really examine that in depth. I always advise to people when they're putting together panel picker proposals that depth is much more important than width. I mean, we've all heard that saying, he's a mile wide and an inch deep. That's never really said
right
as a complimentary thing, right? So you want to be the proposals that work best are the ones that are a mile deep and an inch wide.
Well, it's really interesting that, I mean, that's the approach that you, I mean, or just the rule of thumb, because I look at a couple of things. One is, I think, interactive experiences have given us the ability to dive deep into various niches, right? Like if you like horse hair, and like, you know, all the different varying types of horse hair and types of horses and their uses. Like you can dive deep in that and find that was a horrible example, but you get what I'm saying. Like, as I'm talking, I'm like, wait, that was even Scott is like not are shaking his head. But
I'm big into horsehair.
Well,
you're not into that on the West Coast.
There's a lot of weaves in the community. That's kind of what I was thinking of as that popped up. But no, and you know, we've had conversations on the show about how because there's so much information available, people will read a headline and the first line of an article or, you know, a blog post or something and think that they know about that particular topic, right? And then it's almost like the answer to the problem of the lack of depth in self-education on things. Right.
Sure.
So I think I commend you guys for just kind of like making that a rule of thumb in terms of how you, you know, you go about filtering what's there.
Again, this is from as with most things we do, this is from much experience doing it the wrong way and realizing that the sessions that people liked least were the ones that were much more overview in nature, that weren't going into any significant depth, whereas the ones that were providing a lot more analysis and were the ones that attendees seemed to like the most. So
right.
We noticed that. We gradually got better, and it's kind of become a part of our pitch now.
Now, South by Southwest as a brand, right? You know, because there's so many different components to it. There's interactive, there's film, there's V2V, I think, in its second year, I think.
Correct.
How does a organization like that launch all these products and grow massively and still maintain the essence of, you know, what it set out to do in the 80s?
Great question. And if you get the answer, please tell us. I think we're, there aren't easy answers there, but we try to continually reinvent ourselves. We understand that, the audience and the community that we serve is constantly reinventing itself. And if we don't reinvent it ourselves, on a fairly regular basis, we're not going to keep up. We have, you know, the how much the events have shifted over the years certainly reflects how much that audience has changed and how much society has changed. As I mentioned before, interactive was previously the smallest part of the event. Over the last few years, we've grown to the biggest part of the event, and I think that, you know, again reflects a lot of luck of being in the right place at the right time, but it also simply reflects how much technology is ingrained, imbued into everything we do now. And every company in one form or another is a tech company, and every, you know, everybody's got to have, or most people who want to get ahead in today's world have to have a fairly good understanding of the digital landscape and have social media skills, that type of thing. So again, you know, our audience has changed a lot. The world has changed a lot in the 30 years. Hopefully we have changed a lot and will continue to change a lot to meet the demands of this audience and this community.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, you got, and maybe it's because of just the roots in music, but the idea of truly listening to the world, right? Truly listening to, because a lot of times people don't make successful pivots. They're not paying attention. Is there a system in place? Like, do you have minions all around that are kind of reporting back to you? Like, hey, here's the hottest thing that's happening right now, or this thing is bubbling up. Like, you know, what system or process do you have in place to make sure that you're fresh?
Well, I think that that is one of the benefits and advantages of the panel picker is that in addition to simply helping us pull in some great ideas, if you take a step back and look at it kind of from a meta standpoint, it helps us identify trends that the community is talking about, that the interactive community is talking about that maybe haven't hit the general public yet. And one of the examples I often cite there is in 2008 and 2009, when the U.S. economy was just tanking and not really going anywhere, where the world economy was in the same straits, In those same years, in the panel picker, we were seeing significant, tremendous, huge, however you want to, whatever adjective you want to use, growth in the amount of proposals that we were getting that related to entrepreneurism and startups.
Right.
And what that demonstrated quite clearly was that this entrepreneurial startup community was fairly insulated from these world economic trends. And in some ways, the two were related, that people had lost their jobs, you know, the jobs they'd had for a while, and were forced to go down to the basement and figure stuff out and you know, find new revenue models.
Yeah, there was a statistic that was like 25% of executives who were laid off during that time or lost jobs or whatever started companies. And as
so out of that shakeout, you know, was born a lot of the startup market that we have today, which in many ways, you know, it seems like it may be a little bit too frothy, but who knows? It also seems very healthy in a lot of ways. But again, to your question of how do we keep in touch, one of our best strategies here is listening to the audience. And one of the best strategies to listen to the audience is this panel picker interface that, again, gives us an insight in some pretty phenomenal ways to what our community is thinking about, what's important to them. You know, another example here is the panel picker entry period is in July, and then voting happens in August. A year ago, 2013, a gentleman by the name of Edward Snowden came on the scene in June. That had a little bit of world impact. Last year, we saw a huge spike in proposals, speaking proposals related to privacy and security, which I think is directly related to what the revelations about the NSA that Snowden put forth, and how much that changed everyone's thinking in the tech world and the world at large. And that one was, I think, a little easier to predict, that we would see a rise in proposals related to privacy and security. But again, panel picker, you know, is in many cases a interesting and accurate barometer of what this community, this community of forward-thinking digital creatives is talking about and thinking about.
Right. It's funny, you know, when you mentioned a little earlier about the idea of entrepreneurs, right? And you look at the whole, each track, right? If you look at film, interactive, and you know, and music, it's kind of, they're all entrepreneurs, right? If you're a band, you have to manage a business and relationships and create your product, right? And the same thing if you're the guys who started Twitter, like you're creative, you have a vision, you have a creative vision, and then you have to manage the business behind that. Or even as a filmmaker, right? You have a vision for a film and you need to start putting it together and getting the right teams and all those things together. So I think that I kind of look at that as also another thread that allows for the growth. And then I had a chance to attend V2V this year. And how is that like an extension of that same sort of principle? And what does V2V stand for? Nobody gave me a clear answer.
V2V is our newest event in Las Vegas. The answer to your last question, V2V doesn't really stand for anything or mean anything. The idea of it would be a fairly blank slate that we could put this branding on and hopefully in a few years, achieve some kind of meaning based on what we've created there. Similarly, you know, 25 years ago when we started South by Southwest, SXSW didn't particularly mean anything and have created that brand and attached meaning to it. But I think that your segue there was impeccable.
Thank you very much. I practiced it. I was rehearsing it in the car.
V2V is very much focused on startups and entrepreneurism, but also tries to see that startup and entrepreneurial visions and process in a larger light. So, you know, we had speakers and panels that were related to music and film, and talked about how, similar to what you described, how a band is in a sense a startup, or how a film, an indie film trying to get distribution deals, how it behaves the same way, or sometimes similarly, sometimes dissimilarly to a tech startup. So again, trying to provide guidance, inspiration, innovation for startups from a lot of different perspectives with the V2V event. Las Vegas is exciting, well, one, because it's Las Vegas, but it's also an exciting place to be now simply because of all the energy that Tony Hsieh is bringing there with the downtown project and this idea of creating this hub of creativity in the downtown area of Las Vegas, which is an area that had become very run down over the last few years, but rebuilding it into something that's very, very special.
So when someone encounters the South by Southwest brand or the South by Southwest experience, what do you want people to walk away with when they walk away from Austin or they walk away from Las Vegas or wherever you guys go next? What do you want people to walk away with?
I think our goal on all of these events is to have people walk away inspired and to a degree recharged. The three tenets of the company have always been creativity and innovation and inspiration. We feel like if you showcase very creative people and very innovative people, that tends to inspire people, and that's always a good thing. I think that message works really, really well in Austin in March because it's you couple that content with spring and it's warm here and the flowers are beginning to bloom and that there's that whole kind of rebirth analogy. And again, in some of our best moments, it's when people have seen a band or seen a film or seen a tech personality and they feel inspired and feel inspired to go back to their job, to go back to their life with a new kind of energy and a new sense of purpose. And that's really a neat thing on the times that we can do that.
Speaking of segues, the show is called Innovation Crush. What have you seen in the marketplace, in the world, whether it's a film, a person, a trend that you are crushing on that you think is pretty amazing?
Well, one of the things that continually inspires me is someone we had as a keynote in 2009 and hoping to have him speak again for 2015. It's not yet finalized, but we're in negotiations on this. This is the gentleman named Frank Warren who does the Post Secret books. And I just find his vision, his understanding, his cultivation of community, and the power of confession and how he's tied this together, very, very innovative and inspiring. I was lucky enough to visit Charlotte, North Carolina in the spring and see a one-act play that has been put together around the whole post-secret concept and phenomena. And that was a phenomenon, and that was a great show to see. Post-secret has certainly also inspired some apps. There's the Secret app that does a lot of the same things, although I'm not sure that they quite understand and nurture community the same effect that Frank Warren does. So again, he's someone who has very, very much inspired me. And I know he's inspired a lot of our attendees. I always tell the story that in 2009, when he spoke at South by Southwest, he did the keynote. It was a 45-minute keynote. There was 10 to 15 minutes of Q&A afterwards. The first person who got on stage was a gentleman who asked his girlfriend, who was in the audience, to marry him as the first question. So, you know, how cool is that when you have a speaker who inspires that kind of thing, when you have an event where people are so connected with the event, they want to, you know, pop the question to their girlfriend.
Exactly.
At that event. So very, very inspiring.
Well, given the divorce rate, maybe this year he'll get up on stage and denounce that decision. No, I'm good luck to that guy. Good luck to him. So the another question we like to ask is for you to finish a sentence for me. Innovation to me is?
Innovation to me is anything that is new and the outcome is uncertain.
I like it. You care to expand a little bit?
Well, I will say that some of my best ideas, or most of my best ideas, are remix ideas. That is actually a quote I heard from earlier this week from a woman named Carrie O'Connor, who is the newly appointed chief innovation officer for the city of Austin. I know that a lot of cities are now creating innovation officers or innovation offices. We had an event with Carrie earlier this week, and this is one of the things she talked about, was her definition of innovation. And I think that, and I like that definition a lot. I think it really nails in a lot of ways what innovation is, as well as how open-ended it is and should be. It's an uncertain outcome. And, you know, oftentimes we are cautious to embrace uncertainty in any shape, form, or fashion. But oftentimes when we do, we come up with some pretty cool results.
That's great. I wish we had more time. I would love to.
I do too.
I got like 18 more questions on my on my piece of paper. But no, I want to thank you for joining us. Where can people go? I'm sure this is very obvious, but where can people go to find more about you or South by Southwest?
The South by Southwest website is sxsw.com. Once you're there, you can click on the portion of the event that you're most interested in, or if you're innovative, the portion of the event that you know the least about. People can reach me, always reach me by email, hugh@sxsw.com. And part of our mission is trying to respond to all emails and all email questions, big or small. So we welcome any kind of feedback or ideas or brainstorms or questions from the community. And
I have an idea. If I can give it to you, it's I think you should have some allergy tips. I have the immune system of a bear. I never get sick. I had so much snot coming out of my face on the plane coming back from Austin. So I would say, hey, put up an allergy, like what to do about allergies, section on your thing.
There you go.
There we go.
I'm not sure this is quite selling the event like we want to.
It's an act of service. See, we know what's going to happen to you before you do, so we're going to give you the antidote.
If you give people really low expectations, then the experience is always a good one, right?
Such is my life. So, Hugh, thank you so much. This has been great. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to talk with you and talk with your audience.
Everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush. You can also follow me at Densinology on Twitter. I'm trying to get a new follower, at least one a month. But thank you, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore, because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.